It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
And welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast as we cover the very latest in property news every morning, 7 days a week. And you'll find us right here on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as Amazon. Gee, the working week, it is almost over. Friday, March the 15th today. And I'll tell you what I've realized, and that is that we have an RBA decision coming up next week, next Tuesday to be precise, not too far away. And plenty of people at the moment are shopping around for a better rate with their mortgage. And we have Mortgage Talk with Anthony Landau coming up tomorrow morning as part of your weekend. But yes, make sure that you do that. You shop around for a better rate, which is what you should be doing. And right now we are catching up on our Friday with Margaret Lomas once again from Destiny Financial Solutions. And Margaret, you've got a couple of tips regarding shopping around for a better rate.
So if you see a bank cut their fixed rates, and you need to look at what terms they're cutting it over. So banks will have fixed rates from 1 to 5 years, and there'll be a different fixed rate depending on the term that you're taking it for. It's a reliable indication that for that period of time, they expect that you will pay more interest to them on that fixed rate than you would if you stayed on variable. So if they're cutting their fixed rate for whatever period they're cutting that for, that would mean to me that they expect that during that time, the variable rates will dip lower than that fixed rate. So it's an indication of what they're thinking. If I can get a fixed rate 0.5% lower than my variable, I can expect during that fixed rate term that my variable is going to come down more than 0.5%. That's what the bank is thinking. So if I stayed on my variable, I might initially be paying that little bit more than the fixed rate. But at some point, the bank's expecting the variable to come down low enough under the fixed rate so that overall the interest paid during that term is going to be less on the variable than on the fixed rate. I never, ever fix a rate if they're going down low like that, unless they're so low that I can do some calculations. Quick example, when banks were cutting their fixed rates right down to below 2%, and I at the time was on about 4.5, I worked out that I needed something like 10 interest rate cuts to beat what I already had on my variable, and it was worthwhile going the fixed at that point in time. That in my entire career investing, and it's now more than 25 years, that was the only time in 25 years that the fixed rates provided a viable option. Generally, they don't, and generally a fixed rate cut tells you mortgage rates are going down.
That is a really interesting formula to apply. I think a lot of people just don't sort of look at the machinations when it comes to all of that. Now, let's move into having a look at new builds, because it's a very sort of unfortunate situation. It's a byproduct of what has happened with COVID, and that is with so many of these builders going to the wall. New builds, of course, very attractive, but people do have to be careful.
They do have to be careful from both an owner-occupier and an investor point of view. We saw another Victorian builder go into liquidation. And unfortunately for the people who are putting up their deposits and paying the money to get their homes built, they're often significantly behind when that happens. Even if they can find someone else to finish off their home, often the amount of money they've paid so far on that build is a lot more than the build is worth, and it costs them a significant amount of money to get that build completed and to have someone else come in. So my advice to people who are buying from a builder is, first of all, if possible, try to check out their financial situation. You know, ask them to show you, particularly if they're a publicly listed company, all of their financial data, so you can make sure that these people are very liquid at the time that you go in. You know, make sure that you have a buffer built in so that if they do go into liquidation, you've got a way to get out of that. And try not pay too much up front. You can negotiate what you're paying as a deposit up front, so try and negotiate that as well. If you're an investor, we often see developers and big builders looking outside of the areas they're building in for investors to buy these house and land packages, and they're selling to them to these investors under the guise of being a great investment and you're going to get X amount of rent when they're finally built. A couple of words of warning here. First of all, check out what the price of that new build is in comparison to existing 2, 3, even up to 10-year-old homes, because those 2, 3 and 10-year-old homes are virtually going to be the same as this brand new build, really. They're just a couple of years down the track. So check out what the price differential is. Often there's a real premium built in for getting that brand new home that you don't see as a return in increased equity. Whatever you pay for the house at the beginning really doesn't matter. What matters is what that house is actually worth. So the new build is only going to be worth what the other houses around it that have been there for a few years are worth. That's the true value of it. And also look at how many of these houses are being built. They might tell you you can get $500, $600, $700 a week rent. And that might be the case when you're first deciding to build that property. But what happens if they build 100 of them and dilute the market to the point where you've now got more supply than demand and rents are forced down? That's the biggest problem that I've seen for investors buying a new house and land package. When it's finished, they hardly ever achieve the rents that were promised. And then they find themselves in a situation where they're not getting enough money in to cover what's going out on their mortgage and expenses. And they often have to sell prematurely at less than it cost them to build that house.
That is also really interesting. I mean, there's so much in what you've just talked about. I want to come back, if I can, just to the due diligence with new homes, because people can, I think the underlying thing here is do not be afraid to go in really hard with your due diligence, because people can be seduced when they look at a building company and they might have 100 homes, massive. Now, we cannot look at large companies with any sort of safety nets and say, well, they're big, I feel confident that I can go with that company, because we know the big ones fall as well. So the key is to do a really hard, in-your-face due diligence and have those exit strategies that you talk about.
Absolutely. And the thing is, most people who go in, particularly owner-occupiers, it's a very emotional process. And most of them go in and have a look at that beautiful display home, which always looks better than what you can achieve at the end of the day anyway. And they decide to build, and they never ask that question about the financial security of the company. They just go ahead thinking, oh yes, big builder, they've got a house here, they're going to be okay. The other thing that often happens with these big builders as well is because they do have to have quite a number of builds going on at the one time, they employ contractors as building supervisors who then use contractors to do the work. And often because the building companies are screwing down the contractors for the lowest price that they can get, you're getting poor work very often. And I've seen this happen time and time again. And then what happens is because that building supervisor is supervising so many projects at the one time, he's getting or she's getting burnt out. And then we see the build time take far too long. My daughter just built a house that was meant to be done in 12 months and ended up taking almost 20 months. And the problem with that is by the time she got to the 12 months, she'd paid 3/4 of the money. And it was an investment property for her, but she was getting no return on that and meeting interest bills and repayments on that loan just out of her own wage. So it can be a problem when the build time gets pushed out. You need a guarantee of build time, and you need in the contract a clause that insists that the builder pay you rent once they go over that build time.
And just coming back to that point about buying an existing property that's a couple of years old, you're getting the same type of property apart from the newness. I've got a really interesting podcast coming up. We like to sort of throw the spotlight on Dubai, and what we're going to be talking about is the lifeline of some of these properties, which in general are about 20 years because of the heat factor. So they rip them down after 20 years. And because Dubai is a maturing market, they don't really know what is going to happen. I mean, can you imagine the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world, having to be, you know, deconstructed as a result of the warping that takes place as a result of the sun?
Wow. Well, I mean, we have very similar environmental factors here in Australia as well. And, you know, back to our first topic about units, or the topic we've discussed previously about units, you think about units, they're thrown up, they're also on a timeline. They also use contractors who they try to get the cheapest build that they can. Developers don't do the work themselves. They get contractors to do the work. Hence, we have all of these issues. We've got the cladding issues. We've got the leaky buildings. These things actually cost money. People think, well, I'm getting into a unit. The body corporate's going to pay for anything that goes wrong. But if the body corporate doesn't have the money, they'll come back to every owner and raise a special levy. If you live in a unit and you don't have the money and there's a sudden $20,000 special levy, you've got to find somewhere to get that money or sell your property. So there's a lot of danger in units. And I just really want young first-time buyers to understand these dangers and not to just go into a unit because it happens to be the cheaper option. Could be better to rent for a few more years and try and save for that house after all.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there, Margaret. Plenty of points that you have raised for consideration and pondering on. And I'll let you get back to your day. And thanks once again for coming on to the Real Estate Breakfast this morning.
Always my pleasure.
Gain insights with exclusive conversations from real estate professionals about buying, selling, and investing across Australia.
And the really big takeaway, of course, is never ever try and do due diligence after you have signed a contract. You are trying to reverse engineer the whole process.
Oh, and it's so mortifying to hear the amount of times when it happens. And I just want to pull my hair out thinking, what on earth were you thinking? But yeah, doing the due diligence after you've signed the contract, after you've entered into a contract that you cannot get out of, right? You do the due diligence then. All you're doing is hoping that you didn't miss something. Knowing when you are bound by that, the terms of that contract, or when you've entered into a binding agreement, that is really important. And that point at which your offer becomes binding is different in every state and territory, as I mentioned earlier.
Don't navigate the real estate market alone. Let us help guide you in the world of real estate every day. Make better informed decisions with the latest news and insights. We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia. The Real Estate Podcast.